Chapter 44 Two Craftsmen. Perrin awoke to something rustling. He cracked his eyes open, wary, and found himself in a dark room.
Berlin's palace, he remembered.
The sound of the waves had grown softer outside, the calls of gulls silent. Thunder rumbled, distant. What time was it? It smelled like morning, but it was dark outside still. He had trouble picking out the dark silhouette moving through the room toward him. He tensed until he picked out the scent.
Chiod?
He asked, sitting up. The Aiel did not jump, though he was certain from the way she stopped that he'd surprised her.
I should not be here, she whispered. I push my honor to the very edge of what should be allowed.
It's the last battle, Chiod, Perrin said. You are allowed to push some boundaries. Assuming we haven't won yet.
The battle at Maralor is won. But the greater battle, that at Thakandar, still rages.
I need to return to work, Perrin said.
He was in his small clothes only. He didn't let that bother him. An Aiel like Chiod wouldn't blush. He pushed off his blanket. Unfortunately, the bone-eating weariness inside him had subsided only a little.
Not going to tell me to stay in bed?
He asked, tiredly searching out his shirt and trousers. They were folded with his hammer at the foot of the bed. He had to lean against the mattress as he walked there.
You're not going to tell me I have no business fighting while tired? Every woman I know seems to think that is one of her primary jobs.
I have found, Chiod said dryly, that pointing out stupidity serves only to make men stupider. Besides, I'm Gaishain. It's not my place.
He looked at her, and though he couldn't see her blush in the darkness, he could smell her embarrassment. She wasn't acting much like Gaishain.
Rand should have just released you all from your vows. He does not have that power, she said hotly. What good is honor if the Dark One wins the last battle?
Perrin snapped, pulling up his trousers.
It is everything, Chiod said softly. It is worth death. It is worth risking the world itself. If we have no honor, better that we lose.
Well, he supposed there were things he'd say the same thing about. Not wearing silly white robes, of course, but he wouldn't do some of the things the White Cloaks had done, even if the world was at stake. He didn't press her further.
Why are you here?
He asked, putting on his shirt.
Gaul, Chiod said. Is he?
Oh, light, Perrin said. I should have told you earlier. I've scrap iron for a brain lately, Chiod. He was fine when I left him. He's still in the dream, and time passes more slowly where he is. It has probably only been an hour or so in his time, but I need to return to him.
In your condition?
She asked, ignoring the fact that she'd said she wouldn't chivvy him for that.
No, Perrin said, sitting on the bed. Last time I nearly broke my neck. I need one of the Aes Sedai to cure me of my fatigue.
This thing is dangerous, Chiod said.
More dangerous than letting Rand die? Perrin said. More dangerous than leaving Gaul without an ally in the world of dreams? Protecting the Karakarn alone?
That one is likely to stab himself with his own spear if left to fight alone, Chiod said.
I didn't mean...
Hush, Perrin Ebarra. I will try.
She left in a rustle of cloth. Perrin lay back on the bed, rubbing his eyes with the heels of his palms. He'd been far more certain of himself when he'd fought Slayer this last time, yet still he'd failed. He gritted his teeth, hoping Chiod would return soon. Something moved outside his room. He revived, hauling himself up to a sitting position. A large shape darkened the doorway, then removed the shield from a lamp. Master Luhan was built like an anvil, with a compact yet powerful torso and arms that bulged. In Perrin's mind's eye, the man didn't have so much gray in his hair. Master Luhan had grown older, but he was not frail. Perrin doubted he ever would be.
"Lord Golden Eyes?"
he asked.
"Light, please," Perrin said.
"Master Luhan, of all people, you should feel free to call me Perrin. If not, that worthless apprentice of mine."
"Here now,"
Master Luhan said, walking into the room.
"I don't believe I called you that except once. When I broke the new blade for Master Almur's scythe,"
Perrin said, smiling.
"I was sure I could get it right."
Master Luhan chuckled. He paused beside Perrin's hammer, which still lay on the table at the foot of the bed, and rested his fingers on it.
"You have become a master of the craft."
Master Luhan seated himself on a stool beside the bed.
"One craftsman to another. I'm impressed. I don't think I could have ever made something so fine as that hammer. You made the axe."
"I guess I did that,"
he said.
"It was not a thing of beauty. It was a thing of killing.
Killing sometimes needs to be done."
"Yes, but it's never beautiful. Never."
Perrin nodded.
"Thank you for finding me, bringing me here, for saving me."
"It was self-interest, son,"
Master Luhan said.
"If we escape this, it will be because of you boys. Mark my words on it as true."
He shook his head as if he couldn't believe it. One man at least remembered the three of them as youths, youths who, in Matt's case at least, had been in trouble more often than not.
"Actually," Perrin thought, "I'm pretty sure Matt's still in trouble more often than not."
At least at the moment he wasn't fighting, but instead talking with some Shan-Chan, according to the spinning colors that resolved into an image.
"Chiad said that the fighting at Marilor was finished?"
Perrin asked.
"It is,"
Master Luhan said.
"I came through, carrying some of our wounded. I should be getting back to Tam and Abel soon, but I wanted to check on you."
Perrin nodded. That tugging inside of him, if anything, it was stronger now than it ever would be. Rand needed him. The war wasn't finished yet, not by far.
"Master Luhan,"
Perrin said with a sigh,
"I've made a mistake."
"Mistake?"
"I ran myself ragged," Perrin said. "I pushed myself too hard."
He made a fist, slamming it into the corner post of the bed.
"I should know better, Master Luhan. I always do this. I work myself so hard, I make myself useless the next day."
"Perrin, lad,"
Master Luhan said, leaning forward.
"Today, I'm more worried that there's not going to be a next day."
Perrin looked up at him, frowning.
"If there was ever a time to push yourself, this is it,"
Master Luhan said.
"We've won one fight, but if the Dragon Reborn doesn't win his... Light, I don't think you've made a mistake at all. This is our last chance at the forge. This is the morning that the big piece is due. Today, you just keep working until it's done."
"But if I collapse..."
"Then you gave it your all."
"I could fail because I've run myself out of strength." "Then at least you didn't fail because you held back.
I know it sounds bad, and maybe I'm wrong, but... Well, everything you're talking about is good advice for an average day. This isn't an average day. No, by the light, it's not."
Master Luhan took Perrin by the arm.
"You may see in yourself someone who lets himself go too far, but that's not the man I see. If anything, Perrin, I've seen in you someone who has learned to hold himself back. I've watched you hold a teacup with extreme delicacy, as if you feared breaking it with your strength. I've seen you clasp hands with a man holding his hand in yours with such care, never squeezing too hard. I've watched you move with deliberate reserve, so that you don't shove anyone or knock anyone over. Those are good lessons for you to learn, son. You needed control. But in you, I've seen a boy grow into a man who doesn't know how to let those barriers go. I see a man who's frightened of what happens when he gets a little out of control. I realize you do what you do because you're afraid of hurting people. But Perrin, it's time to stop holding back.
I'm not holding back, Master Luhan,
Perrin protested.
Really? I promise. Is that the case?
Well, maybe you're right.
Master Luhan suddenly smelled embarrassed.
Look at me. Here, acting like it's my business. I'm not your father, Perrin. I'm sorry.
No,
Perrin said as Master Luhan stood to leave.
I no longer have a father.
Master Luhan gave him a pained look.
What those Trollocs did... My family wasn't killed by Trollocs,
Perrin said softly.
It was Padan Fain.
What? Are you certain?
One of the White Cloaks told me,
Perrin said.
He wasn't lying.
Well then,
Luhan said.
Fain. He's still out there, isn't he?
Yes,
Perrin said.
He hates Rand. And there's another man, Lord Luke. You remember him? He's been ordered to kill Rand.
I think they're both going to try for him before this is over.
Then you'll have to make sure they don't succeed, won't you?
Perrin smiled, then turned toward the footsteps outside. Chiad entered a moment later, and he could smell her annoyance that he'd sensed her coming. Bane followed, another figure in complete white. And after them, Masuri. Not the Aes Sedai he would have chosen. Perrin felt his lips tighten.
You do not like me, Masuri said. I know this.
I have never said that, Perrin replied. You were a great help to me during our travels.
And yet you do not trust me. But that is beside the point. You wish to have your strength restored, and I am probably the only one willing to do it for you. The wise ones and the yellows would paddle you like a babe for wanting to leave.
I know,
Perrin said, sitting down on the bed. He hesitated.
I need to know why you were meeting with Massima behind my back.
I come here to fulfill a request, Masuri said, smelling amused. And you tell me you won't let me do you that favor until I respond to interrogation?
Why'd you do it, Masuri?
Perrin said.
Out with it.
I planned to use him, the slender Aes Sedai said.
Use him?
Having influence with one who called himself the Prophet of the Dragon could have been useful.
She smelled embarrassed.
It was a different time, Lord Ebara. Before I knew you. Before any of us knew you.
Perrin grunted.
I was foolish, Masuri said. Is that what you wanted to hear? I was foolish, and I have since learned.
Perrin eyed her, then sighed, proffering his arm. It was still an Aes Sedai answer, but one of the straighter ones he had heard.
Do it, he said, and thank you.
She took his arm. He felt his fatigue evaporate, felt it get shoved back like an old quilt being stuffed into a small box. Perrin felt invigorated, strengthened, powerful again. He practically leaped as he came to his feet. Masuri sagged, sitting down on his bed. Perrin flexed his hand, looking down at his fist. He felt as if he could challenge anyone, even the Dark One himself.
That feels wonderful.
I've been told I excel at this particular weave, Masuri said. But be careful, it...
Yes, Perrin said, I know.
The body is still tired. I just can't feel it.
And, as he considered, that last part wasn't exactly true. He could sense his fatigue, like a serpent deep within its hole, lurking and waiting. It would consume him again. That meant he had to finish his job first. He inhaled deeply, then summoned his hammer to him. It didn't move.
Right, he thought. This is the real world, not the wolf dream.
He walked over and slipped the hammer into its straps on his belt, the new ones that he had fashioned to hold the larger hammer. He turned toward Chiad, who stood by the doorway. He could smell Bane out there, too, where she'd retreated.
I will find him, Perrin said. If he is wounded, I will bring him here.
Do that, Chiad said. But you will not find us here.
You're going to Marilor?
Perrin asked, surprised. Chiad said,
Some of us are needed to bring the wounded in to be healed. It is not a thing Gai Shine have done in the past, but perhaps it is a thing we can do this time.
Perrin nodded, then closed his eyes. He imagined himself close to sleep, drifting. His time in the wolf dream had trained his mind well. He could fool himself with concentration. That didn't change the world here, but it did change his perceptions. Yes, drifting close to sleep. And there was the pathway. He took the branch toward the wolf dream in the flesh and caught just a hint of a gasp from Missouri as he felt himself shift between worlds. He opened his eyes and dropped into buffeting winds. He created a pocket of calm air, then hit the ground beneath with strengthened legs. Only a few teetering walls remained of Berylane's palace on this side. One of those broke apart, the stones shattering and pulled into the sky by the winds. The city beyond was mostly gone, heaps of rock here and there indicating where buildings had once stood. The sky groaned like bending metal. Perrin summoned his hammer into his hand, then began the hunt one last time. Tom Marilyn sat on a large, soot-blackened boulder smoking his pipe, watching the world end. He knew a thing or two about finding the best vantage to watch a performance. He judged this to be the finest seat in the world. His boulder was just next to the entrance into the Pit of Doom, close enough that if he leaned back and squinted, he could peer in and catch some of the lights and shadows playing inside. He glanced in. Nothing had changed.
Stay safe in there, Maureen, he thought. Please.
He was also close enough to the edge of the path to overlook the valley below. He puffed on his pipe, knuckling his mustache. Someone had to record this. He couldn't spend the entire time worrying about her. So he searched his mind for the right words to describe what he was seeing. He set aside words like epic and momentous. They were nearly worn out with overuse. A wave of wind blew through the valley, ruffling the cottonsore of Aiel fighting red-veiled enemies. Lightning surged, pounding at the dragon-sworn line holding the path up to the cave entrance. Those flashes sent men flying into the air. Then that lightning started striking at the Trollocs instead. The clouds went back and forth like that, the windfinders seizing control of the weather, the shadow taking it back. Neither side yet had managed a clear advantage for long. Hulking dark beasts ravaged the valley, killing with ease. The Darkhounds did not fall despite the work of dozens in concert. The right side of the valley was covered in a thick mist that, for some reason, the storm winds couldn't budge.
Climactic? Tom thought, chewing on the stem of his pipe.
No.
Too expected. If you use the words people expected, they grew bored. A great ballad needed to be unexpected. Never be expected. When people start to expect you, when they started to anticipate your flourishes, to look for the ball you had hidden through sleight of hand, or to smile before you reached the twist line of your tail. It was time to pack up your cloak, bow once more for good measure, and stroll away.
After all, that was what they'd least expect you to do when all was going well.
He leaned back again, peering into the tunnel. He couldn't see her, of course. She was too far in. But he could feel her, in his mind, because of the bond. She stared at the end of the world with grit and determination. Despite himself, he smiled. Below, the battle churned like a meat grinder, ripping men and Trollocs into chunks of dead flesh. The Aiel fought at the periphery of the battlefield, engaging their shadow-taken cousins. They seemed to be evenly matched, or they had been before those Darkhounds arrived. They were relentless, though, these Aiel. They didn't seem tired at all, though it had been... Tom couldn't put his thumb on how much time had passed. He'd slept maybe 5 or 6 times since they'd come to Sheol Ghul, but he didn't know if that marked the days. He checked the sky. No sign of the sun, though the channeling of the Windfinders and the Bull of the Winds had summoned a great line of white clouds to crash into the black ones. The clouds seemed to be having a battle of their own, a reverse image of the fighting below, black against white.
Perilous, he thought. No, that wasn't the right word. He'd make a ballad of this for certain. Rand deserved it. Moiraine, too. This would be her victory as much as it was his. He needed words. The right words. He searched for them while he heard the Aiel beating spears against shields as they ran to battle, while he heard the howling wind inside the tunnel, and while he could feel her standing at the end. Below, the Demoni crossbowmen cranked frantically. Once, thousands of them had been shooting. Now, only a fraction remained.
Perhaps terrifying?
That was a right word, but not the right word. It might not be unexpected, but it was very, very true. He felt it to his bone. His wife fighting for her life, the forces of light pushed almost to the brink of death. Light, but he was frightened. For her, for them all. But the word was pedestrian. He needed something better, something perfect.
Below, the Tyrants thrust their polearms desperately at attacking Trollocs. The Dragon Sworn fought with numerous types of weapons. One last steam wagon lay broken nearby, carrying arrows and bolts brought through the last gateway from Berlhon. They hadn't seen supplies in hours now. The distortion of time here, the Tempest, was doing things to the One Power. Tom took special note of the wagon. He would need to use it in a way that preserved its wonder, showing how its cold iron sides had deflected arrows before its fall. There was heroism in every line, in every pull of the bowstring, and every hand that held a weapon. How to convey that? But how also to convey the fear, the destruction, the sheer strangeness of it all? The day before, in an odd sort of bloody truce, both sides had paused to clear away bodies. He needed a word that gave the feel for the chaos, death, the cacophony, the sheer bravery. Below, a tired group of Aes Sedai began moving up the pathway to where Tom waited. They passed archers keenly scanning the battlefield for fades.
Exquisite, Tom thought. That is the word. Unexpected, but true. Majestically exquisite. No, not majestically. Let the word stand on its own. If it is the right word, it will work without help. If it's the wrong word, adding other words to it will just make it seem desperate.
This was what the end should be like. The sky ripping apart as factions fought for control of the elements themselves. People from varied nations standing with their last strength. If the light won, it would do so by the narrowest of margins. That, of course, horrified him. A good emotion. It would have to go in the ballad. He drew on his pipe, and knew that he did so to keep himself from trembling. Nearby, an entire side of the valley wall exploded, showering rock down upon the people fighting below. He didn't know which of the channelers had done that. They were forsaken on this battlefield. Tom tried to stay out of their way.
"This is what you get, old man," he reminded himself, "for not knowing when to let go."
He was glad that he'd not been able to escape, that his attempts to leave Rand, Matt, and the others behind had failed. Would he really have wanted to sit in some quiet inn somewhere while the last battle played out? While she went in there alone? He shook his head. He was as much a fool as any man or woman. He just had enough experience to recognize it. It took a few seasons before a man could put that together. The approaching group of Aes Sedai broke apart, some remaining below, one limping tired lay up toward the cavern. Cadswain. There were fewer Aes Sedai here than there had been before. Casualties were mounting. Of course, most who had come here had known that death waited for them. This battle was the most desperate, and fighters here were the least likely to survive. Of every 10 who had come to Shael Ghul to fight, only one still stood. Tom knew for a fact that old Rodolite Heralda had sent a farewell letter to his wife before accepting this command. Just as well that he had. Cadswain nodded toward Tom, then continued on toward the cavern where Rand was fighting for the fate of the world. As soon as her back was to Tom, he flipped a single knife, his other hand still holding the pipe in his mouth, through the air. It hit the Aes Sedai in the back, right in the middle, severing the spine. She dropped like a sack of potatoes. "That's an overused term, it is," Tom thought, puffing on his pipe. "A sack of potatoes? I'll need a different simile there. Besides, how often do sacks of potatoes drop?" "Not often." "She dropped like what? Barley spilling from the ripped end of a sack, slumping to the ground in a heap?" "Yes, that worked better." As the Aes Sedai hit the ground, her weave faded, revealing another face behind the Cadswain mask she'd been using. He recognized this woman vaguely, a Damani. What was her name? Jaen Kaida. That was it. She was a pretty one. Tom shook his head. The walk had been all wrong. Didn't any of them realize that a person's walk was as distinctive as the nose on their face? Each woman who tried to slip past him assumed that changing her face and dress, maybe her voice, would be enough to fool him. He climbed off his perch and grabbed the corpse under the arms, then stuffed it in a hollow nearby. There were 5 bodies in there now, so it was getting crowded. He drew on his pipe and took his cloak off, placing it here so that it covered up the dead hand of the Black Sister, which was peeking out. He checked one more time down the tunnel. Though he could not see Moiraine, it comforted him to look. Then he returned to his perch and took out a sheet of paper and his pen. And, to the thunder, the yells, the explosions, and the howl of the wind, he began to compose.